Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust in God Network. And we bring you another week's Sports Wrap. As always, we open the show with a prayer. John Coltrane, dear Lord. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Have your will and have your way. We thank you, Lord, for those things we so largely take for granted. Dear Lord, let your way be our way. As that man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. We ask these blessings, all in the blessed name of your darling son, all homage to you, the one and only true God. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. Trust in God, may you not work. It's a weekday sports wrap. The last word. Day. Doc Stanley says, what's the depth on the God Network? Once again,
last word,
the best word, the only word you need, right here. And we'll be giving you a little rundown on Thursday Night Football. Cam Newton, who broke the rookie record for yards passed in the game last week, he was surpassed by Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts had some great quarterbacks. Johnny Nash is considered the greatest quarterback of all times right there with a Baltimore Colt. And Burt Jones was, wow, some kind of quarterback. Two intros for you. Let's start with Larry Hardesty and then the big one by Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Mr. Hardesty, could you do me a favor?
There are seven wonders of the universe. You're about to hear the eighth. Welcome to Sports in Depth on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, with your host, award-winning journalist and commentator, the legendary Doc Stanley. You have time to...
Larry Hardesty, the greatest African sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, which makes him the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of radio. Now, the ESPN sideline reporter for the New York Jets, J-E-T-S Jets. Well, I got an issue, too, that popped up the other day. A story about coaches that players least want to play for, and Bill Belichick and Rex Ryan were in that number. As my good friend John McEnroe would say, are you serious? Rex Ryan, a player's coach, Rex Ryan, who took the Jets to near the Super Bowl 2 years in a row back-to-back, Bill Belichick? I mean, Belichick is in the mold of Bill Parcells. Everybody knows Parcells is a player's coach. He's a player's coach, and he protects his players, and he's won a couple of Super Bowls. Parcells has, and so has Belichick. But without further ado, let me see who's riding up on me. Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco. And without further ado, the Sports in Depth Nation is here with you once again with our intro, the one and only Rooney, a.k.a. Little Coco, Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Rooney, take it away.
Thank you, good doctor. And as you said, the Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr., I'm here. We are here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that indeed is Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
Thank you, Rooney. Nobody does it better. Boy, that sounds like Carly Simon. That's you. Rooney, you know what hit me. And Dusty in here will talk some boxing. Him and Harold. Harold sent me an email. Carmen Basilio passed away.
Oh, the great
Carmen
Basilio, tough guy, tough character, great fighter.
85 years old. I remember, I think about Basilio, I think about the story that the underworld came to Ray Robinson. He was fighting Basilio and said, hey, look, Ray, look, now, we've got $1 million here. Why don't you let Carmen have this one? And then, you know, next one, you'll go ahead and do what you want to do. And $1 million is always $1 million. You know, I mean, whether it's now, whether it's later. But, you know, Ray said it was something, you know, he couldn't do. And he happened to lose that fight anyway. Hal Weston Jr. now, is that Hal riding up, I think?
Yeah.
There he is. Hal. Hey, Harold, thanks for the email. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Trust in God Radio Network. It is our Thursday sports wrap.
And Colin Basilio passed away. You sent an email. Tell us something about Colin Basilio, Harold.
Oh, he was a fighter. I mean, you know, I mean, no fanciness, you know, really come to fight and knew his craft and had a good chin and, you know, was a game guy. I mean, he beat Ray Robinson. I mean, he was tough. He was tough. He's from that blue-collar, tough era back then where, you know, those kind of guys were tough. I mean, you know, you couldn't take it for granted. And Common was one of those guys.
Yeah, I have a nice picture here. It gives me a segue right into the Trust in God Sports and Death Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame. I was at a fair one night, and they took a picture of him and Archie Moore, and I got that picture autographed, and they're both part of my Trust in God Sports and Death Artifacts Hall of Fame. Yeah, I meant to ask you too, Harold, the other day. You talked about Tommy, and you talked about the viciousness of Tommy. And, you know, that was amazing, Harold, the transition that he made from an amateur to a pro. Wasn't it? I mean, to go from, you know, I guess the amateur mindset. I mean, now I heard that Tommy didn't have any knockouts as an amateur, Harold. Is any truth to that?
He had about, like, one or two knockouts, but he wasn't a knockout artist.
Wow.
Like he became, like, a pro. When he started jumping into the pro ranks, he just became a beast. And Emmanuel Stewart had a lot to do with that.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. You know, it's funny you said that. It's not funny you said it because you are Harold Weston, one of the great fighters, one of the great minds of our time, the only African-American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. That's all you need to know. And all you need to know is this. When Harold Weston said sayonara, so did boxing at MSG. There was some scandal that came behind it. There was some hanky-panky that came behind it. And to this day, Madison Square Garden does not have a boxing department. And when Newkins and Harold says the best matchmaker he ever saw was Teddy Brenner.
Yeah.
Teddy Brenner said the best match he ever saw was Harold Weston Jr. So no more needs to be said there. Doc Stanley on the Trust in God Radio Network. I like that, Winnie. And you know, you talked about it's amazing you said it, because I was reading about the fight with him and Ray, and Emmanuel Spully wasn't happy, and he simply said to Tommy, okay, let's go back to the amateurs. And just like that, like a switch, Tommy showed that great boxing ability and, you know, that people had never seen, because like you said, Harold, they were just dragging people out when Tommy fought them.
Yeah, right. I mean, Tommy was always just a good boxer from the amateur days. He could box his butter like you saw when he fought Ray. He was all that, but Emmanuel had, you know, changed that all around and got him to be more, you know, be more leveraged on his punching power and put more power behind it. And he became one of these dynamic punchers. And, I mean, you know, it wasn't no joke. He was a puncher. I mean, he had a good jab. He had a good right hand. He had fast hands. I mean, Tommy was all-around world champion. I mean, you know, Emmanuel knew that. I mean, the whole thing that Tommy had a problem was with stamina. But, you know, boxing and the other problem he had was defense. You know, he had no real defense. And Manuel didn't teach no defense because his whole thing was offense. And Manuel thought that offense was better. Offense would counter defense. And that was his whole thing, his strategy of boxing.
I knew that I could
beat Tommy because he didn't have no defense.
Well, yeah, a guy like you could beat him, but per se, I mean, you're the rarity, you and Ray. But so, I mean, Emmanuel's theory was the best defense is a great offense.
Right. And but see, that was the whole thing about the fight is that, you know, Emmanuel was going to stop the fight. He told me before, you know, a long time ago, he said, I was going to stop the fight in two more rounds. He said, because I knew that you was going to knock him out. I said, yeah, you're darn right. You know, but the fact is that, you know, he knew the whole situation. I mean, going in there with Tommy Hearns, being on top of him, not moving back, and blocking his punches, and his punches are getting slower, so that means I got his timing. Manuel knew that, you know, Tommy was getting tired, and I was going to knock him out from exhaustion. Why take a chance of getting a kid hurt at that young age where he can, you know, develop and learn from his mistakes and still become world champion? But God, you know, God blessed him, and he got away.
Wow, you know, you say so much about that. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Trust in God Radio Network. It is our late night sports wrap. The last word, the best word, and the only word you need as you move into the next day And we got to talk about football, Rooney. How did Thursday Night Football turn out for us? Looking for Justino.
Well, basically, Doc, the Colts basically ran all over the Jaguars, basically. You know, the big plays, you know, they beat them up pretty much at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football, Doc. I mean, the Jaguars added a couple of incidental points, 27-10, I believe, was the final. Mm-hmm. But they added a couple of garbage time type points. But the game itself was never in question. So, you know, it kind of went, basically the ebb and flow was basically back as we would have expected. The Colts and Andrew Luck, who's going to be a good one, as I said, basically beat the Jaguars on, you know, both sides of the football.
Hold on, wait a minute. Somebody's riding up. Hold on, who's this? Justino, baby, Lois is with us now. Dusty, yesterday Harold sent me an email, and we didn't talk about it. And just quickly, your thoughts and reflection as the entourage of luminaries in the world of boxing continues. Colin Basilio passed away yesterday. Dusty,
yes,
your thoughts on Colin Basilio?
Well, I got to know him when I first saw him when he fought Kid Gavilan.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of underestimated him. He was an onion farmer up in Canastota, New York, and he would just be a payday for Kid Gavilan. But he actually beat the crap out of Kid Gavilan, and he didn't get the decision. Kid Gavilan got the decision. But that's where he came into prominence, and from then on he was a name in the welterweight ranks. And he seemed to carry a grudge. That's the word I'm looking for, a grudge against Sugar Ray Robinson. He felt Sugar Ray Robinson underestimated him and never gave him his due. I don't know what that was about. In the first fight,
that was an ego thing. That was the whole thing about that.
It was ego, well, probably.
Yeah, it was the whole ego.
Yeah, Harold. Yeah, it probably was ego. And he never liked him. I saw him last maybe about 5 years ago. He was interviewed, and he seemed to carry that grudge all the way to his grave. Because even then, at that interview, he said he never liked Sugar Ray Robinson, and all, you know. But he was a pretty good journeyman. You asked me, I was on the fight car with the first. I told you the story many times. I was
Tell us again. Let the world know.
I was on the fight card for the first Ray Robinson in Massilio in Yankee Stadium, and I got bumped off because you know, and that was big money at that time. Four rounds, $500. I said, "Whoa! I hit the lottery, man!" But Basilio, I don't know, Harold, you can correct me on this. I don't know if it's today, this is the norm, but in those days, the sparring partners who went to camp with the champ or the main event guy would automatically get an underneath fight under the guy that they trained with.
Right, that used to happen, right.
And it seems that when they came in, one of his sparring partners did not get a fight, and they were complaining and all that. So the commission called in all the guys in, and they said, "Okay, everybody, stand by, don't move." You know, I was already dressed, ready to go home. I you know, weighed in and everything. He said, "Don't go," you know. So my manager came back out. He says, "Well, look, Basilio's guy didn't get in a fight, you know, so they want to change, you know, they want to change the card, you know." So I said, "Okay, well, I'll fight him, you know, fight him." And I says, "Well, no, you're not fighting. They're going to give you, you're going to give him your fight." Well, I said, "Wait a minute, that's not fair, man." You know, I busted my ass all these weeks. I trained like if I was fighting for the title. And he said, "No, but, you know, the guy's going to give you a couple of tickets." I said, "I don't want to see them effing fight, man. I want to be in that freaking ring. That's $500 bills, man. What's wrong with you, man?"
Mm.
I said, oh, well, that's the way they decided. All the other guys got in, you know. I said, man, I don't care, and this is where I got in trouble. I don't care if I have to fight Basilio, man. I'm going to go under.
And
the guys, everybody heard that, and one of the inspectors came out. If I'm lying, I'm dying. And one of the inspectors came out and said, take this guy out of here and calm him down, man.
Right.
I was so freaking angry. I said, man, come on, man. That's ridiculous, you know. And
well,
that's what is...
You know, the back then there was more of a order that
yeah.
you had to follow, and there was more
exactly.
rules you had to follow. You couldn't
Absolutely.
Be disrespectful to
right, right.
your manager
yeah.
or
exactly.
anybody, but you would get
yeah.
you would get blackballed. You get blackballed.
Right, exactly, and you're right, Harold. And that's when you know. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think Angelo Dundee had trained. Basilio, I could be wrong, Harold.
He did train for Basilio. You're right.
And he looked up, and everybody looked up, and they dragged my ass out of there. And that's when, unfortunately, that was the end of my boxing career, because that's when I said, the hell with this crap. I'm not going to waste my time anymore. That was a...
They didn't offer any money, Dusty? Just tickets?
No, just tickets. And then I calmed down. I said, okay, I'll go see the fight, you know. And the freaking dude got beat by the dude that I was supposed to fight, man.
Let me tell you something, man.
yeah, go ahead, Harold.
Let me say this. If Dusty did any more whacking out, Dusty wouldn't be talking to us today.
Oh, God.
I'm just going to leave it like that. No, Dusty, no.
Jack Staley. Sports and Depth, late night sports rap on the Kiss Cut Radio Network. And he's live today because not another word did he say.
Right.
That was pretty pertinent. Doc, I have a pretty pertinent question for Dustin Howard, if I may, just quickly.
You're right, on the show.
Dusty and Howard, you especially, since you fought Tommy. Dusty, Howard, did Tommy have I call it the Mike Tyson effect, where a lot of guys were basically so intimidated before the fight because of their rep and, you know, actually seeing them fight, that a lot of guys lost the rumble before they stepped through the ropes. Did he have the Mike Tyson effect, as I call it? Speaking of Tommy Hearns, Harold, Dusty?
Oh, yeah, Harold, yes. I got my opinion, but go ahead, Harold. You go first. You want to go first?
I would say this, okay? Tommy was so vicious, and I would say this, that if he had bombed me out like he was doing everybody else,
right,
nobody would have wanted to fight him. Marvin Hagler was scared of him. Ray Leonard, all them guys were scared of him. Believe
yeah.
me.
Wow.
And
yeah.
and Ray would not have fought Tommy. They would have really had to give Ray all the money to fight Tommy Hearns. Okay.
Exactly.
And the reason why, because there was no real, you gotta understand, fellas, there was no real flair of any mistakes Tommy was doing when he was knocking people out.
Exactly.
I mean, the jab was good, the right hand was good.
He knocked out Pepino Cuevas, I never forget it, Harold, face first.
Right. But you don't understand. When you step in the ring with Tommy, y'all look at Tommy from one angle at the weigh-in. He looks skinny because he's coming in, you know, weight.
Yeah.
When he's coming in that ring, he looks like he's three times bigger.
Exactly. I mean, the guy looks like a light heavyweight.
Now, I like the line you said. How said that looks like the same guy we had at the weigh-in.
Yeah, I said that's the same guy that I had the weigh-in at yesterday.
Who's this guy? His big brother?
Yeah, that's what I said. They done put a replacement. I said, well, I guess somebody's going to go tonight. So that was my attitude.
Ray Leonard said when he weighed in, he weighed 147. He said, but at night of the fight, his whole upper body said light heavyweight.
Yeah, it is, man. I'm telling you, he's the only man I have ever seen in my life boxing who was one size at the weigh-in and became this big, gigantic guy at the fight when he took off his robe.
Wow. Exactly. He Tommy Hearns had the effect on people.
Oh, yeah.
The effect on people, the way Joe Louis had the effect on those bone of the month when he was going to fight them. They lost their fight There was an expression somebody used a long time ago that I never forgot. It said they lost the fight as soon as they signed the name on the contract.
Wow.
And that's the effect that Tommy Hearns. These are the only two guys in my time that I remember had that effect on opponents, Joe Louis and Tommy Hearns.
But I think you have forgotten. Let's go back further in your time. What about Goliath?
Who? Goliath. Well, after I beat Goliath, I beat Joe Louis. Yeah, okay.
Did Tyson have that effect on opponents?
Joe Louis had that effect on opponents the way Tommy Hearns had effect. In fact, if you guys
he had the effect on when he was coming up. But when
exactly.
He got into that top ring, nobody, Walcott did not fear him. Edward Charles did not fear him. Okay?
Right.
Okay,
there was
quite a few guys did not fear him at all.
Also,
this is what I meant about the Bum of the Month campaign.
The light heavyweight, what was his name?
No, the
light heavyweight that was beating Joe. And Joe knocked him out.
Billy didn't fear him.
Harold, that's why he got knocked out.
But the thing is, that was the reason why he got knocked out. And tell you, but you gotta understand that era. Those guys didn't have a lot of those guys didn't have fear of nobody. Everybody really thought they were better than everybody. That was the whole great thing about those eras.
Harold, to be honest about it, Doc Stanley Sports Network and the Trust in God Real Network, you and Dusty were the same way. Hey, you know, I put my pants on the same way you do. It's part of the culture that you guys came from. You took no shit. And you talked about, and you keep saying this, and Dusty also interjects this, it's the respect factor. It's the order of the chain of command. It was the decorum. It was the way things were done, which is so absent in our society today. And you talk, you both guys, gentlemen, talked about the respect factor, the respect given to the your foe, given to the game. You just said something, hey, you know what? You didn't have outbreaks. You didn't show any kind of disrespect in any form of shape because, you know, it was once again our era. You know, Dusty wasn't Dusty, he was Mr. Dusty. Harold was Mr. Weston. You know what I mean? You, as a kid, you kept your mouth closed and you learned and listened, but you didn't speak until you were spoken to, and even then, you were hesitant. So, you know, you're talking about how, in a lot of ways, gentlemen, how boxing, how the sport shaped you guys to make you two of the greatest human beings that has ever walked this earth.
My father and Gil always told me, and this is, And I almost went off track on this when I was coming up. But the fact what they told me, respect everybody. I don't care if the guy's old and 100. Respect everybody and get in shape for everybody. And that is something I have always learned. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're 100, you're 100 and old with 100 knockouts. If you're old and 100, I'm going to respect. I'm going to be in shape when I step in that ring.
Exactly, that's the point.
And so that was my whole knowledge that I got from these men that made me who I was, because everybody said, but one thing they said to me, if somebody step over that line, you take care of them. And that's the whole thing. I'll give you a shot, even in the street. I'll give you a shot. I'll give you a chance to walk away, but I'm not going to let you walk across that line, because you walk across that line, now you're in my territory.
But see, now you bring up a great point, too. As a police officer, I said, I understand to a certain degree that I'm paid to do a certain job, and I'm paid to take a little guff. But when you step over the line, when you move into Melvin Stanley, when you move to Doc Stanley territory, you have to be addressed and administered to.
That's exactly what it is. You're prepared. You prepare yourself. Sometimes, I don't know, Harold and I seem to be talking to each other, but I know that I prepared to the hilt walking into that ring, but there was always that 2 or 3% that I said, man, I wonder if I did enough. I wonder if I conditioned myself enough. Really.
And you know something, Dusty? And the respect factor, it's funny that you should say that, because you've actually piggybacked on my next question, And, you know, and you know something, Doc, I want you to really get on this, too, because, you know, Howard and Dusty being the fighters on the panel, I would be willing to bet, not knowing whatsoever, I would be willing to bet that Howard and Dusty never came in over their contracted weight. And I mention that because these days, guys are losing their titles on the scales, Dusty and Howard. I never heard of such
Well, Rooney, in the Brooklyn card, the guy's fighting Paulie Malignaggi
for
his title in his country and in his hometown, and the guy comes in overweight?
And Bam Bam Rios did it twice, and
Adrian
Broner did it twice,
right.
And Chico Corrales did it once. Oh no, Castillo
and in the
did it, and then Chico
Corrales. I never heard of that, Doc.
This is what I was saying a long time ago. That it's not so much the fighter who's undisciplined.
There you go.
But
Dustin.
It is the weakness of his trainers
and you talked about Sid Martin, who told you, don't come in here with that left-handed stuff. Didn't he tell you?
I know.
And you tried to sneak it, figuring he wouldn't see it. He didn't know.
Yeah.
And what did he tell you, Dusty?
The next time I see you turn southpaw, you're not coming back to this gym. I said, uh-oh. I better stay right-handed. And I hate that he did me a favor, man.
Dusty and Howard, have you ever heard of so many guys coming in losing it on the scale?
Let me tell you the reason why I always on weight. I did not want to hear my father's mouth and Bill Francis' mouth.
Exactly.
Okay. As simple as that. Even when I lost a round in the fight, right? I said, oh, my God, Jesus. Back to this corner, boy, listen to these guys yell at my ass. Boy, so that was my whole thing, and it was good for me.
Because
that was the discipline you put in. It woke you up.
Yeah, it woke you up, and you said, man, I got to focus, and I got to do what I have to do. But I always came on weight, or maybe half a pound under the weight. You know, something, I always... Never had trouble with weight. That's what.
Yeah, they never had to worry about me with weight. They never. I was thinking today. I said, you know, as men, as us being men in general, as men walk, right? You take two gentlemen that goes into a gym, and they're men, and they got two hands, two feet, and everything else, right? But one is always going to be better than the other one, and the one that's better than the other, you never could figure out, say, why we got the same trainer. Why is he better than me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the confidence comes out of a lot of men, because you can't even figure it out. I'm doing everything you tell me to do, like he's doing it, but why is he better than me?
Yeah. Why does he like him and not me? I got a Mercedes Benz. He's driving a Jaguar. I got two mansions. Gentlemen, hold on just a second. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network. And it's a sports wrap here on Thursday. And there's Coach. When it's tonight, we also talk about the loss. Again, in the boxing fraternity of Colin Cecilio. And we also want to once again salute Barack Obama for another term. Another 4 years, Obama time, one more time, Barack, and it's the President of the United States of America. We're going to talk a minute, too, when the Cincinnati Sea Wings joins us from the football side of things, where we're just sort of stunned by this talk about Rex Ryan being one of the coaches that guys don't want to play for, him and Bill Belichick, who's seen two of the finest coaches in history of baseball, football. And you know what I wanted to talk about for a minute too, gang, and let's start with you, Rooney. You know, I was stunned. No, I wasn't. You know what? I'm never stunned by the racist concepts and doings of baseball. Walt Weiss yesterday was signed to manage in the big leagues, and he's coming directly from high school. I mean, this is, you know, the constant slap in the face to minority managers just never stop. This guy came directly from high school. So that means you didn't even look at former African-American managers like Willie Randolph, Hal McRae, Cito, they didn't even look at them. You know, Bunk Wills, Murray, didn't even look at them. But more importantly, you even jumped over the African-American coaches, Hatcher, Clyde, I mean, just looked over them. I mean, this guy got a job, Rooney, as a manager.
Colorado?
Huh?
Was it Colorado? Colorado Rockies?
Weiss got a job as a manager in the big leagues, and he was coaching high school.
He was signed by the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, I'm just saying, God,
Willie Randolph went into an interview for that damn job.
Hey, listen, he didn't get it. I mean, what I'm saying is, here's a guy from high school. I mean, Jimmy, forget about looking at the African-American managers that used to manage.
Not even minor leagues, not even international league.
High school. Chris Chambers had never had a chance yet to manage. Here's a guy who was the batting coach of the world champion Yankees. Here's a guy who's a former Rookie of the Year, a batting champion in the minor leagues, a gold glove winner. Hey, what about, anybody ever heard of Eddie Murray? I mean, here's a guy, gentlemen, who got snatched off the bench from high school. Last year, I mean, the indignation never stops. You took Bobby Valentine out of the TV booth, gave him a job, okay? And now here's a guy that, I mean, the next move has to be a female softball coach. Who will be the first female manager in baseball. You know, her softball team
that's
is 100
That's almost unheard of, though, Doc, really. That what you said is almost unheard of.
I mean, I'm not stunned. I'll never forget Bill White when he was president of the National League. And the last time I saw Bill in the way, we were walking out. He said, Bill, so he said, they're not going to change. He said, that's why he left. They're not going to change. And you look at this move here. Walt Weiss got a job. He was the manager in high school. No minor leagues. Harold, no minor leagues. This guy has got a job. And now, even Boston, what Boston did, they traded for the manager of the Blue Jays, who already had a job, as opposed to interviewing Willie, as opposed to Tony Pena, Hal McRae. I mean, Davey Johnson came back after being on the scrap metal.
Washington Nationals.
Now, you mean to tell me nobody can remember Cito Gaston, who won 3-4 division titles and back-to-back World Series? I mean, Davey Johnson's won one World Series. And you know what I was stunned to find out? Doc Stanley's
he made the last out when he lost to the Mets.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Besides that, what I found out is that Jim Leland, who gets all his kudos and admiration, Jim Leland never played in the major leagues. Never played in the major. I think he's a lifetime 220 hitter. Never played in the major leagues.
Never got off
leagues.
Training camp. Yeah.
Huh?
Never got off training camp, minor leaguer.
That's the 220 hitter. And Bochy's a lifetime 239 hitter. Here's Harold Weston, hot shot rookie, won 20 games back-to-back. How do you, a pitching coach who was 15-87, tell Harold how to pitch? I mean, how is a guy a 239 hitter? How do you tell Dusty, who run Rookie of the Year with a 342 batting average, how to hit? How do you tell Rooney, who just hit 37 home runs back-to-back season, you hit 5 your whole career, what he should be doing at the plate? It's like Dusty Baker said. I remember when Dusty guy came around, and he was talking about black man. Dusty said, you know, this stuff comes in, it's a hot story, and after the story is done, nothing is done. He says, guys pick their friends when they get the job, and that's it. And you look at a guy like one thing about Joe Girardi, he did pick Pena and Mike Harkey as his bullpen coach. But it's just, you know, Harold, it's just sad and touching the way black managers are just ignored.
But it's I don't know. It's something that you don't really know what the cure is. That's the word I was looking for. what the cure is, because they're going to do it. Look, let's go back to the top. The baseball commissioner, what's his name? Spiegel? The baseball commissioner.
Are you talking about Bill Kuhn, or are you talking about Selig?
No, the today's baseball commissioner.
Bud Selig.
Okay. The man retired. Right away, my brain starts working overtime. I said, ooh, who of color can take that spot? The old boys network, they all turned around and made him a deal to please come back for another 2 years because they needed him. You know, man, you mean to tell me that we don't have a pool of people?
Yeah, the thing is, Castillo, what kills me, as you look at baseball across the board, and all these guys, all these inferior players have gotten jobs, there's nothing been for Willie Mays, you know, there's nothing been for Hank Aaron, there's nothing been for Ernie Banks, there's nothing been for Bob Gibson.
You're right, here's a guy that retired, man. He said he was tired. He wanted to go home with the family. And the old home boys network men dragged him out of retirement.
Baseball is on the plantation. I mean, Mike Bellamy is going to try to join us in a minute here. I want to get him to talk a little boxing with us, too, as we talk about Common Sense and other things. It's a good old boy network. I mean, this here shows – I mean, here's an amazing thing. Here's an amazing thing. Barack Obama, and our president, once again, salute him for getting back. America, because it's the white vote that got him in, okay? America has said, okay, we are going to take and accept a black man in the highest office in this country and the most prestigious position worldwide. And the New York Yankees are not even remotely thinking about a black manager and have gotten rid of all their black coaches. Okay, yeah. Willie Randolph and Chris Chambliss, who were part of championship teams. I mean, Chambliss is still to date the only world champion batting coach that ever got fired, you know. And, I mean, the Yankees are not even and here was the next to last team to get a black player. And they're not even remotely thinking about a black manager. And they've got a guy, Girardi, Dusty, that you talked about, that he won manager of the year after being fired.
Willie Randolph.
And had a losing record.
And Willie Randolph brought the Mets from the scrubs of the National League to one strike away from winning the World Series against the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, they were in the pennant race with the Philadelphia Phillies, and he doesn't get.
Well, you know, the bottom line, if you get the postseason, the fact that he took him to the division and got him into position to get to the World Series, and I think to date he's still the only manager to be fired on the road and in the midst of a winning streak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The games
that people play, because what brought his demise was the fact that he was being criticized because the Mets were floundering, you know, and one enterprising sneak reporter, the reporters can make or break you. He asked them, did he think that all the criticism of his mismanagement and the Mets of floundering could have been biased. That was the word, bias.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Randolph, deep thought, honestly said, well, it could be. It could be bias. And the next day, boom!
It's always amazing.
Willie Randolph's cries racism in baseball.
It's amazing,
that's
but it is racism. When me and you say it's racism, you know, it's like we're out of line. You know,
Dusty,
it's not the right time.
He had to apologize for his words.
It's amazing that if I support you and Harold, if I support you and Rooney, I'm a racist. But if a Caucasian supports another Caucasian, it's just what you support. I remember a situation where they were telling all the Latin players not to go up to Jimmy's Bronx Cafe. Didn't think it was the kind of place that they should be in. And, you know, I'm thinking, first of all,
they said they're unsavory elements was the term they
used.
Yeah,
you see, but, you know, it was
baseball.
Amazing.
Like unsavory elements there.
Yeah, Rooney. Like these guys know, but nobody told nobody not to go down to Little Italy. I mean, where they know that.
Absolutely right, Doc.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
hotels.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's places where guys have been killed. You know what I mean? The
mm-hmm.
FBI hangs out there more. Nobody said they couldn't go down to Little Italy. It was all right to go to Little Italy, but you couldn't go to Jimmy's Bronx Cafe. And all those things changed and remained the same. And, you know, but I just thought this Walt Weiss move was just a continuation. I mean, I remember the Mets.
What's the term in football, Doc, pardon me for interrupting. Could you imagine a giant GM, Jerry, was it Jerry Reese?
Jerry Reese.
Yeah, could you imagine Jerry Reese being the GM over, just imagine this for a second, being the GM over at the Jets? Making all those incredibly poor personnel. Could you imagine Reese being? The writers would have tried to run him out of town if he was doing a poor job at Tannenbaum.
Justin, you remember when Reese first got the job?
Exactly. They tried to run him out of town.
Dusty, who was he? Who was he was one question. Where'd he come from? Dusty, he had no tenure. Remember?
Here's a man who was second banana GM for 15 years. So in those 15 years, he helped mold, I believe, two Super Bowls.
Yes, he did.
And then when he came on board, they were going to hire from the outside, and somebody in the Mara family said, no, we got Jerry Reese here, give him a shot. When they gave him a shot, all of a sudden, all the columnists said, who's this guy?
What I remember, Dusty, about Jerry Reese is that he called us when we were then. Here's Larry Hardesty.
There are seven wonders of the universe. You're about to hear the eighth. Welcome to Sports in Depth on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, with your host, award-winning journalist.
Okay, I remember when we were at SAR-FM Radio, we called Jerry. He called us from his hotel room, had to go to a meeting, and sit there and talk. And we told him, hey, we're glad that you had a chance to stop and talk with the GM of the Super Bowl winning team, and they went out and beat the Patriots.
Hold on, we got
Mike Bellamy from the Bellamy Boxing Report, and we also got Mike Bellamy, the number one sportscaster of Brooklyn Cable Television, their director, first ever African quarterback in history. Staten Island High School. Mike, we're talking real quickly as you join us. As the continuing deletion of the boxing family continues this year, Angelo Dundee, Petronelli Brothers, Bert Sugar, our beloved Emmanuel Stewart, and just yesterday, Howard Weston sent me an email. Colin Basilio.
What?
Yeah, Colin Basilio passed away, 85 years old. One of the few guys who beat Ray Robinson when Ray Robinson was still Ray Robinson, up in Canastova, where the Hall of Fame is. But yesterday, 85 years old, Colin Basilio passed away, and the parade continues. Leroy Neiman, another name that we lost in the boxing fraternity, and we got this fight coming up, Mike. We've got Trout against Miguel Cotto. That's going to be in the Garden. And we talked to Harold about that, too, how the Garden's kind of regressed. But do you know anything about Trout?
No. Mm-mm. Not
at all. I'm the only one that knows.
you, Dusty, and his mother. He told me it was his mother that got him into boxing, you know, because he's from New Mexico, but his mother's originally from Brooklyn. And she was the one that got him in the box, and he did the color. As you remember, Mike, he was the color commentator for that big Brooklyn card. And what we were talking about, Mike, too, is the fact that how sad and touching is Harold Weston said. Harold, you got to trademark that. That, you know, the gentleman that fought Paulie Malignaggi is fighting Paulie for a world championship. He's coming into Paulie's town and his country. Uh-huh. The guy comes overweight. And we're constantly hearing this, Mike, redundantly, of guys coming in overweight. And Harold and Dusty are saying, no, you can't totally fault the guy, as you got to fault the guy that's training him, Mike.
Yeah, but if it keeps happening, you got to start managing yourself to a degree, too, though.
Mm.
Because it takes both two sides of the coin. It's right. the self-respect of the athlete, knowing that he signed on the dotted line to meet a certain wage. Boom.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then it's the manager, the trainer. Today, the modern fighters have not only a trainer, but a personal trainer, a nutritionist. That nutritionist was my mom. My mom was my nutritionist. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any personal trainer. I just had one trainer that made sure that I ran and did my word work, did the sparring, jumped the rope, did my calisthenics, the whole nine mm-hmm. yards. But it was that also me, self-respect, knowing what I had to do to meet that contractual weight. But today, I don't know what the heck is going on. But it takes two to tango. It's also the management. Why go up to training camp 6, 8, 10 weeks, and you come back five or six pounds over your contractual weight or 3 pounds, and then you have the gall to refuse to lose those weight? Mm-hmm. Adrian Broner was one of them. He came in and said, I'm a growing kid. I can't lose. So he rather give away the freaking fine, which was $30,000 of his purse. For the same thing with this guy, Jonathan Gonzalez, who came from Puerto Rico, 15-0, a rising star. He had a 54-pound contract. He comes in 62, and it was a $120,000 contract. He gave away $60,000 as a fine, and so what? And to me, he fought. To me, he got beat, but they called it a draw. I said, man, what kind of nonsense is this, man? But this is exactly what's happening today, the breaking down of disciplines, the breaking down of commitments to that contractual weight and the things that you're supposed to do. Why waste all these monies going to training camp if you're going to come in as a fat slob? If you're a featherweight, then you're going to come in as a light heavyweight, but you're still going to fight as a featherweight? it's ridiculous. But that's the sad thing. That's the sad thing in boxing today. Doesn't make sense, man.
And the thing is, Dusty, I have never, ever seen so many guys failing to be able to come in at their contracted weight. Never seen it before.
Exactly. And this, again, they should bring the weight back, the way in time that they had to fight. That's another thing.
The problem you got in this is where this life is, this world is changing, and you got incompetent trainers out there today. That is going to show other people, and they're going to be incompetent as we move on. So basically, you've got the blind, teaching the blind. And that's where the problem is all with the boxing world. Boxing is going to be dead in the next 10 years, 15 years, because you don't have no teachers that's teaching these young guys the real method of really teaching guys to be good fighters. I have not seen one good fighter throw a four or five punch combination in all the fights that I've been watching.
What's the answer going to be, Howard? Is it going to come from the United States? Are they going to have to reach over the team?
I mean, look at
find
our
guys who can teach or what?
I think they're going to come overseas. Where our situation started was from the amateurs. We don't even have no talent in the amateurs. And
exactly.
If you don't have talent in the amateurs, how are you going to have talent in the pros?
Look, if you want, years ago, how did I go back? I keep saying years ago. You went into the gloves, man. Even a guy who was unattached, that's a guy that represented no club, man knew what the hell he was doing. I mean, you had on top of that, when you fought a certain weight category, you had to fight five, six, seven times, man, before you even if you made the finals. And every one of them was a war. These guys knew their business, man. Today, you got these slap-happy dudes who hit you and smack you and hit you and hold you and wrestle you and they win titles, man.
They don't even have to fight to get to the finals, some of them, right?
They get a guy on a bunch of buys. And one decision and three buys or whatever.
Yeah, one decision, three buys, right, Doug. Yeah. One decision, three buys.
you sit there and you say, what the heck did this dude do to get there? But the fact of the matter is, first of all, there's not that many competitive people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people who were dying to get into the gloves and fight for the gloves. You know, it's funny. In my time, again, I got to say my time, guys coming out of the bar, they said, man, you know, you look like you could fight. Man, join the gloves. And even some of these guys lasted maybe two or three fights, unattached, fighting until they, of course, they fought a tougher dude. But some of these guys are two or three fights just coming out of a bar, going to a gym for a month, and learning the rudiments of this business. But today you don't even have that anymore. And that's what it is. The amateurs, my God, it's horrible. Even you see it in the Olympics, and you see it in international competition. Very rarely do you see a Mayweather or a Cotto or Oscar or Spinks or Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, or Riddick Bowe, or, you know, and even, and this is funny, I mentioned Riddick Bowe. Riddick Bowe was knocked out by Lennox Lewis in the final for the gold medal round. Lennox Lewis was a nothing. Lennox Lewis was just a tall, bougie Canadian with one hand, a right hand that will club you to death. Mm-hmm. And he beat Riddick Bowe because Riddick Bowe was very undisciplined, and he didn't take it serious and all that. He wasn't in no shape.
Okay, I got to come in again, Dusty, and I have to remind you to quit saying things that I agree with. And you're not following the pattern.
I'm not following the script. Okay,
but you know.
He was right about Riddick Bowe because Riddick Bowe had a kitchen in his bedroom.
Hey, I couldn't believe it. The guy wanted a house with a kid. Not only that, you know, Eddie Futch didn't understand how after this man won the heavyweight championship world, Rock did a great job of promoting him and put money in his pocket. But like he said, he showed no discipline. And the final at 27-10 in Annapolis, Andrew Luck, he ran for two touchdowns in the win tonight. The Red Bulls are out. Their season over. In the world of football, or AKA soccer, so they're done. And we're talking also about the past when it comes to. And you know, Rock Newman had a lot of faith in Big Daddy, where Butch Lewis didn't have a lot of faith. And I think Harold and Mike, you know, all you need to know about Riddick Bowe is that and supposedly a good big man never loses to a good little man. I mean, he did beat Evander 2 out of 3, but he doesn't win that last fight against Evander if he doesn't throw his shoulder out. But I mean. Discipline seemed to be really the big thing with Big Daddy, and losing to Lennox, it kind of made Lennox. But Harold, I just thought that Riddick Bowe was nowhere near what he's made up to be.
No, he wasn't. I mean, Riddick was a guy. He was very fortunate to get where he was, and he had that great moment that night to make all that skill that he had come out. And, you know, in boxing, in any sport, if you don't have the discipline of really controlling your own self, of not doing certain things, like we know, don't mess with drugs, don't overeat, don't mess with women before an event and all that. I mean, if you don't have the discipline to not do those things and knowing those things are not accepted, then basically you are scared of being achieving anything in life because that moment of you trying to be successful scares you, and so basically you take yourself out of the mix.
Was that the case when he fought Galata, and Galata had him in both those fights? And
both
Marion
those
Borkin
fights.
Said
I gave me out of them in two fights.
And Marion Borkin said it. Marion B. Borkin, Black Bodacious Beard. He said Galata saw success in front of him. Galata saw victory in front of him. Galata saw the big picture and he was too scared to take it, Harold.
Right. Yeah. Let me say this. I mean, let's, you know, you got to understand, when you're going for a title, something that you have been dreaming to do since you was a little boy, and you got this title. I mean, titles today don't mean nothing. Winning anything today don't even mean nothing no more. But when you, back in those days, when you know that little window, and everybody knows that you are winning a world title, okay?
Right.
And this success is getting ready to come on you. A lot of people can't handle that, fellas. A lot of men cannot handle. You got to have a group of people around you that's molding you for this success. And he's going, you're going to stay in control, and you're going to stay disciplined. You're going to mess up a little bit, but they can always bring you back to the same place, and you're going to act right and do the right thing.
Exactly.
A lot of men don't do that. Okay.
Let me just say something to you, okay?
When I was fighting for the world championship, the first thing came to my mind when I stepped in that ring, I said, I made it. I'm fighting for the world championship. And first thing that came to my mind was when people were saying, you ain't going to be, when I was little, you ain't going to be nothing, but look, I said, look at me now, I'm on TV. Now, all that came into my mind, that moment of me fighting for the world championship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I'm on top of the world, Fred.
So basically you go through those points in your life. So when you're a fighter and you're winning a fight, then all of a sudden something comes down on you. And that's what happens to a lot of guys in fights when you see them fall apart because success can hurt a lot of people. A lot of people can't take it.
Howard, how much pressure is there, Howard? How heavy is the pressure of fighting?
Hold on. Here he is. Cincinnati Sea Wings just rolled up. Cincinnati Sea, the guardian of Rex Ryan. Sea Wings, hold on a minute. Howard will answer that question. Then we want. Don't ride off. Come back. Come back, Wings. Wings, come on back here. Hang on, Wings. Hold your horse. Howard will answer that question, and then we got Cincinnati Sea here to talk about some football. Go ahead, Howard.
What was the question again?
Howard, the question was, how heavy is the pressure, Howard? You know, how heavy does the pressure build, Howard, when you're in a world championship situation?
It builds on you because of the fact that there's so much tension in your mind and in your body.
Exactly.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And as you drifting into this big moment, you know, the most 90% of your success is gonna be your body and your mind.
Right.
But mostly your
mind
is gonna be the controlling one because your mind is gonna take you into another world if you're willing to go there and get you over that big hump to be successful. You know, that whole pressure of winning is the hardest thing in the world. Any man can say they can lose. Any man can say they can lose. But every man cannot say they're going to win because it's so hard. And so for you to have that control of saying, I'm going to win this, and then take it all out. And you know what the words you got to say to yourself? And Ray Leonard can vouch for that. Even Tommy Hearns can vouch for it. All the guys that really was warriors. That I'm willing to die to win this.
Exactly. Where's the land?
Well, the great line from Dr. King.
That's the whole thing about it.
The great line from Dr. King.
Life
isn't worth living
to the fact.
Until a man has found something to die for. And you know, the thing that you and Dusty has portrayed here tonight, the dedication, the sincerity, and the willingness, I mean, to go that the last mile. I mean, the great line by Dr. King, so many great lines, but if a man hasn't found something to die for, then life isn't worth living at all. And real quick, let's go back here to see what
Mr. Jones. Was Leon Spinks a prime example of that?
Oh, yeah, because you know what Leon was? Leon Spinks was that because he had nothing else to face anyway. He knew he had nothing to lose when he put Ali. That becomes when you see a guy fight like he did from round one, then act like he was even tired because he is so focused. He said, well, I ain't got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm. Got nothing to lose.
Basically,
that came from him and perhaps.
Yeah, hold tight. Here we go. Hold on. Of course, as always, mic on, lights off. Is our next segment on the sports wrap. We gave you the latest Colts 27-10 winners tonight on Thursday Night Football. Andrew Locke runs for two touchdowns instead of throwing. It's all over for the Red Bulls. Their soccer, their football season is over. We lost Tom Brasillo yesterday. Jets are playing on Sunday. We got Cincinnati Sea Wings, Rex Ryan's right-hand man to talk about that. Walt Weiss, from high school to the Major League, only an American, if you're the complexion of the collection. We're going to close this segment and come back with sports on. Lights off. Mike on lights off. Rooney, tell everybody good night and then bring us into Mike on lights off.
Thank you, Doctor. The Sports in Depth Nation's been here. The Sports in Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Sports in God Radio Network, and the straw that stirs the drink's been here. And that indeed has been Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Rooney, gentlemen, don't move. And anyway, hold your horse, okay? Hold your horse. And quit bumping the dusty horse. Hold it. Come on, Larry.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday.
And with that, John Coltrane will bring us back into Mic On, Lights Off. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's Mic On, Lights Off. They're here. There's Steno Baby Lewis, Tyrone Weston Jr., Steno Jr. too, Melko Selsmith Jr., Michael, Go Deep Bellamy, and Cincinnati Sea Wings, the right-hand man of Rex Ryan. Dear Lord, we thank you for this part two, for only through you can we be where we are. We love you, we thank you. In the name of your darling son, Jesus, amen. And with that, it's my point. Lights off. And with that, hold on, Rooney. Dusty, hold tight, Dusty. Rooney, bring us into Mic On, Lights Off, and we will continue. Sports Wrap, as we told you, the Colts, they won the Thursday night football game, and the Red Bulls are no longer playing football this season. Rooney, tell us about, bring us into Mic On, Lights Off.
Doctor, again, the Sports In Depth Nation is here. Our Sports In Depth panel is here. We're giving you a little extra with Sports In Depth. Mic's on, lights off. I indeed am Mel Smith Jr. This indeed is the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is again with us. And again, we go to the great Doc Stanley.
Thanks so much, Rooney, for the intro. Larry Hardesty, you got something to say?
There are seven wonders of the universe. You're about to hear the eighth. Welcome to Sports in Depth on SAR-FM Radio, the heartbeat of Africa, with your host, award-winning journalist and commentator, the legendary Doc Stanley. You have time to tell a friend about Sports in Depth. It's heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12 to 2.
That was our time. Well, you hear it, Dusty, you had you finished up with something, and we go to see what
I wanted to wrap up on this thing about discipline and all that. This is where the great Emmanuel Stewart comes into the picture, where, of course, we all know that he had four or five world champs all at the same time. I don't know how many, but he did have them all at the same time. But
McKinney, Tommy Hearns, Mike McCollin, Gerald McCollin.
McCrory. Going back to Lennox Lewis's relationship with him, Lennox Lewis was, like I said, he was a stumble bum. I mean, he was a hard hitter, undefeated. He had one rock of a right hand. And when he lost to Oliver McCall knocked him out with that flash right hand, who was trained by Emmanuel Stewart. Emmanuel Stewart was then contracted by the Lennox people. And I will never forget what he said. He said, I'm going to take him, and I'm going to build him up. I'm going to give him a jab. I'm going to give him a hook and a right hand, and I'm going to make him fight the way he's supposed to be fighting tall. And as you look at it, the rest was history. This is where the discipline of the student and of the teacher combined to bring you to a higher level. This is what Harold was saying. These people, they bring you up to a higher level, and you look at yourself and say, I can do this. I'm going to fight for a title, or I'm going to defend my title, and I can do it. The only thing with Lennox Lewis, of course, he had a weak jaw, Hasee Rockman, but the fact of the matter is that he brought him up. Emmanuel Stewart actually made Lennox Lewis, and he made the Klitschko brothers. And I can say that we could all be angry at Emmanuel Stewart, because he created those two monsters in Germany, and they own lock, stock, and barrel the heavyweight title.
Yeah,
everybody's information, there are 17 world titles being disputed throughout the entire country. Can you imagine 17?
That's twice the old 8+1. And Harold,
exactly.
Once again, in your great line, said, we're going to go to Mike Bellamy real quick, and then we're going to go to Sea Wings. Mike, you heard.
I got to go to bed, but yeah, I'm
listening. Okay, no, give it quick. You heard the sentiments of Lennox Lewis. And one more time before you leave, your thoughts and reflections on the great Emmanuel Stewart.
Oh, right. He was, you know, it's everything everyone said, I agree on about it. You know, he made a lot of fighters, made a lot of champions, you know, he did a great job. I think he was even better, you know, in terms of building up a fighter than Angelo Dundee. You know?
Angelo did have some champions at Wally, but I think all his notoriety that came from Angelo. But the thing that Harold said the other day, and the great line from Marion Boykin, you know, is that every championship fight, Emanuel Stewart should be in both corners. Harold said the other day, with the passing of Emanuel Stewart, we have lost the last real great boxing trainer in history of this game. Mike?
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's true. 100%. Yeah. Because a trainer like him basically taught the fighter more about the little nuances and the things and, you know, how to live their lives. And there's all types of things that went into a trainer. And now, you know, that, like, you know, he was saying, you guys were saying before, those days are long gone. And today the fighter has so many distractions, too. So many distractions.
Mike, would you say it was after the post-Tommy Hearns era that people really got a chance to recognize and see the greatness of Emanuel? I mean, because he was so linked with Tommy that you didn't really see with Tommy's talent, even though, as Harold said, it was the ingrained acknowledgments and the things that Emanuel was doing. But it was the post-Tommy Hearns era where people saw the true greatness and the genius of Emanuel Stewart.
No doubt. Like I said, he could take a fighter, you know, and builds him up, where Angelo Dundee would basically fine-tune you, like he did with Sugar Ray Leonard, or that sort of. He would make a suggestion here and there, where Emmanuel would take you and make you, break you down, and then build you.
Yeah. You know, it's a tremendous line, because John Condon said what you said. He said, in reality, Angelo never taught Ray or Ollie anything, and you're saying, you know, what Angelo did was put in the spark plugs in the gasoline, where Emmanuel broke you down and did everything.
Right. Rebuilt the engine and made a better car, better automobile, yeah. Better fighter.
Mike Bellamy from the Bellamy Box Report, the sports director of the number one cable television and station in Brooklyn, and also the first ever African-American quarterback in the history of Staten Island football.
One more thing. You were talking about Paulie Malignaggi, too, and that fight. I mean, the way Paulie throws his jab, and then he drops it. And that's something I believe he has to work on. Maybe it's too late for him, you know, to do that.
He always throws
that jab, and then he drops, and all you have to do is come over right hand.
Could an Emanuel Stewart have changed him?
You know, I don't think Paulie would listen. He seems like the type of guy who's just, I don't know. That's what I pick up from him, you know.
I don't know.
Maybe I might be wrong. Just the feel I get from it.
Mike Bellamy. Well, Mike Bellamy is part of Doc Stanley's Sports and Definitely the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Mike on Lights Off. Hold on, Dusty. Mike on Lights Off Sports Rap here. We told you the latest. Thursday Night Football, the Colts won the game. We lost Concilio yesterday. Red Bulls will be playing no more football for the rest of this season. It is the Jets coming up. Okay, C-Wings, you got the floor here for a minute. Your team is coming on tonight. Andrew Luck and the Colts, they win. Is Luck as good as they make him out to be, C-Wings?
He's definitely developing. He's starting on an even playing field, basically new Jack player, playing on a new Jack team for the most part. And he's progressing very well. He's progressing very well. I don't think as quickly as RG3, but they both have their own ups and downs, improvement areas that they need to work on. But they're doing well. He actually broke Cam Newton's record.
You're talking about RG3, and right away, now, they're talking about he's better than RG3. RG3 is playing like he's been in the league 2 or 3 years already. And I think RG3 is the better of the two. Actually, I think RG3 is better of the three. And I think long-range-wise, you give him some weapons. But already they're talking about Andrew Luck is the better of the him and RG3.
No way. Luck is good, and he's going to be good. Don't get me wrong, Doc.
and panel. He's, the luck is going to be good, no doubt about it. But RG3, should his career be lengthy, you know, without any major career-threatening injuries, broken leg, broken bones, that kid has, I'm telling you right now, future Hall of Fame written all over him. Robert Griffin III. Write it down. Write it down.
C-Wings?
Exactly. He ran all over the Giants. I mean, the Giants thought they had their number. He ran all over them. I mean, he, even after he took that hit and had a minor concussion, he came back and made him even better. It's like he didn't miss a step. But definitely you're going to see RG3 stick out. He's athletic. He's a aptly playing the quarterback position as opposed to being a quarterback, being an athlete.
The thing about RG3 is he can beat you with his legs, he can beat you with his arm, he can beat you with his brain.
Well, the great line that was conveyed to me by Patrick Farrar was RG3 is a passer and not a thrower. And with that line, I want to shoot you guys, starting with you, C-Wings, and then we want to talk about this road game that the Jets are coming. You know, is Michael Vick about ready to be benched? And in your mind, as we shoot to the panel, do you think, Cincinnati C, that Michael Vick should be benched?
Oh, that's a tough question. It's a toss-up. I think they may give him one more chance. But I don't see the backup quarterback being any better. It's the same thing with the Jets. They have to be able to protect him, and they're not protecting him. He's getting hit. Not to put all the blame on the offensive line, but, you know, there are a couple of things that Michael Vick does as well. You have to hold on to the ball. You have to try to avoid the pass and throw the ball away. I mean, you're much older. You're not the Michael Vick you were when you played for the Atlanta Falcons. But I think he still has a couple more years left in him. But I don't know. I don't think the players are responding to Andy Reid. He has reached his plateau.
Why? But what happened? I mean, the guy's been a good coach. I mean, why are they not responding to Andy Reid anymore?
The question is Andy Reid responding to the Eagles? Andy Reid has had personal problems, his two sons, and all that weighs heavy on the man.
You know, Dusty, you brought that up. You brought that up, and I'm thinking before you came on, and this is, you got to hang up now because we're agreeing too many times for this week. But yeah. Do you think there was a lack of disrespect? And see, Rooney, I want you to do this first. Have everybody hit this. Do you think there's a lack of disrespect for Reed when they found out that his son had a drug problem and died from drugs, Rooney?
Wow, that's a tough one, Doc. You know, that's kind of hard to answer. But I will say this, Doc, not to avoid your question, because that's really difficult to answer. But I'm just thinking, Doc, that maybe they're thinking over there in Philly that they need a change. I mean, I think the guys, what has he been a coach over there for about 17 years or so? Easily the longest tenured coach, you know, in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. You know, the longest length of service with any one team in the NFL. I think they may need a change over there, Doc. Reed, Vic, they may be ready for a change over there. You know, and the thing about Vic that you have to understand, Doc, before I go, and I learned about this off C, the thing that you have to understand about Vic is, Doc, is that he's not the biggest guy in the world as pro football goes to begin with. And Vic is the type of guy that rather than just throw the ball away, is always trying to get that last little bit of extension and juice out of
the
play. Always trying to find that kind of silver.
And it was like that with Atlanta. I mean, the guy was taking such a beating.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't see guys like Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't want to get hit. I don't think any quarterback wants to get hit.
Yeah.
So you don't really see him. The biggest hit I've seen Tom Brady take was from Buffalo. I can't remember that game, but he took such a big hit. This is before they changed the rules. The guy hit him helmet for helmet, He knocked the helmet off of Tom Brady. And, I mean, Tom Brady got up, but you can see he was shaking.
Yeah.
But prior to that,
you got to remember that he also had a season-ending injury, Tom Brady. And he still wears a brace. And he's not the Tom Brady he was before the injury. And basically, of course, it's true, no quarterback wants to get hit. But what the fact is that this guy, Michael Vick, has gotten hit because he's my type of quarterback. He's a scrambler. He runs. He can't find a receiver. He wants to keep the play alive. And he wants to run, and he takes the hits. Normally, if you guys remember, correct me if I'm wrong, a quarterback does not run into the defense. He slides in to get the extra yardage.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs right into him like a running back. And that's where he gets hurt. But getting back to Andy Reid, it's not so much lack of respect for him, it's the fact that he's had a lot of personal problems on his shoulders, and maybe he's lost the knack of being a totally concentrating coach of his team, and where he has to worry about his two sons who got into drugs. One of them who was a sideline coach, and who knows if he was high on drugs as he was coaching with his father. You know,
Dusty, I mean, now you brought a point up. Could there be the fact that they say, hey, man, you're a head coach, you knew the kid was doing this, you got him as a job coaching us, could
exactly.
that be a factor in the loss of respect?
Exactly. Well, I hesitate to say loss of respect, because I think the guys like him and all that. I think it's loss of Andy Reid being able to command the discipline and the performance of his team, of his members, because of the fact that he's had these personal problems. He may have lost credibility.
Credibility.
And being able to run a team.
But the
Harold,
where's
Harold Weston at?
Yeah.
Come on, Harold. Here's a guy who's had a son that's drug problem, and now as old as Dusty can. These guys have had jobs in the organization. Could the players say, hey, man, there's a loss of respect, or they don't want to listen to this guy anymore, Harold?
Well, I think in this situation with Randy Reid is the fact that I think he done ran his course. And the fact is, like any coach or anybody, when you finally catches up with him and realize everything that he does, and you can pretty much read his mind before he even does anything, then his whole skills go out the window. And so
exactly.
I think he pretty much just he ran his course in this field of football, especially with this team, because of the fact that he's doing the same plays. He's he's got the same same things going with his players. Because I think that any coach, when their offense is not protecting their quarterback and they're getting sacked as much as he's doing, there's a problem. And
seven times
there's
that
a
game.
Problem.
Seven times,
and they'll make those
seven
adjustments.
Times.
They don't think they make those adjustments. Then there's a problem with the coach, and I think that these other coaches know that, and they go after his players.
Good
like
they, and
like
Harry said,
Doc, there. I mean, I watched the game this Sunday. It was like the offense wasn't even standing. They just run right through him and jump right on top of Vic. It was crazy. It was just
Rooney?
Like Harold said, they've heard, he's been here so long, Doc, with the same message. You know, after a while, you know, whether wanting to or not, after a while you've been here so long, the guys start to tune you out. As Harold said, he's been there for so long. They've heard the same message for so long. I just think they start to tune you out. Harold, maybe not intentionally, but they hear the same message for so long. Like Harold said, they know what he's going to say basically before he knows what he's going to say, because they've heard it so long in the same message. Guys start to tune me out, Doc, and I think maybe they just start, they need a new message, a fresh message.
In other words, you're saying things have gotten old, have gotten stale, but now, see, Wings, I read an article, can't believe everything you read. I read an article where two of the coaches that people don't want to play for is Bill Belichick. I mean, is what he's saying getting stale? And Rex Ryan? I mean, I don't think there's a more popular coach than Rex Ryan. I don't think there's a guy who's more for his players. I mean, Rex Ryan.
But being popular and being good is two different things.
Rex Ryan is not that great of a coach. Well, you know what? Maybe his record's not being good. But here's a guy. Well, okay, but Belichick, Sea Wings. Can Belichick be getting stale up in New England?
How do you say that? They win it.
It can be.
I mean, because you look at it, he has his share of troubles up there with the Spygate and different things like that. So, I mean, the ownership seems to love him, but this is a business where change comes quick and sometimes without notice. I mean, you see guys like Wade Phillips. I mean, you saw him in Dallas.
Right.
That they were going to fire him in the middle of the season. It's you're starting to see that trend in the NFL now, especially when the fans and the media are really coming down on the team, because let's take a look at it. It's a business. Like any other sport, it's still a business. They're to make money. You see Jerry Jones, he's been in the news lately as usual, about him being the GM, the owner. But he said he's not going anywhere as a GM. I mean, the guy's the owner. He can basically do what he wants.
My question here is, I mean, Belichick, I mean, a year ago, 2 years ago, he was a genius. He was considered the greatest coach of his era, the greatest coach of his time. I mean, Rex is and both Belichick, but even more so, Belichick is cut from the Bill Parcells school, and Parcells is a pro players coach. Won the Super Bowl. I mean, you're telling me that Belichick, if he doesn't win within the next 2 years, the geniusy is gone? If he doesn't win in the next 2 years, he's no longer the greatest coach of this generation?
Isn't it just like Jody Watley? What have you done for me lately?
And that's what it's true now. You and Dusty, I got to see in the same group.
I mean,
Dusty,
why are we talking about Rex Ryan? He ain't won no Super Bowl.
Exactly.
We sit up here talking about Rex Ryan like he don't want 2 or 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah, but even when you look at guys like Belichick, look at Jeff Fisher. He didn't win any Super Bowls, but they kept him. He was the longest tenure coach with Andy Reid behind him. I mean, he was there when they were the Oilers. So that goes to show you, but what type of results he got. He went to 1 Super Bowl, which he lost.
Yeah, C-Wings, cut you. Okay, this week, 2 big football games. You're going to be at the St. Louis game. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Okay, the Jets, they got to win 1 of these games, should win both of these games. What's happening this weekend? What's happening in St. Louis?
Well, when they play, they're going across country. That's a strike. Normally the teams don't do well when they travel across country. Cross country to play these games, and then you have to compound it. You being the Jets, you're not playing well. You're surrounded by a lot of other distractions. You know, they do say it doesn't distract them, but listen, when there's a big pink elephant in the room, you can't help but notice it. You know, a lot of questions about what are they going to do with Tebow. They're not really utilizing them. We were sworn in secrecy up there at the Courtland training camp, and you know it's this big, powerful weapon they're gonna bring out, and it just turned out it's like the Bugs Bunny cartoon. They put the big firecracker up there, and it doesn't explode. And this is what happened. I mean, they have to be consistent in their play. They have to start making those big plays. The wide receiver core that they do have, Stephen Hill, I know he's a rookie, but the guy's potential is there. He has to step up. Now you put on center stage. It's like how Victor Cruz came up.
You know the problem with the Jets, C-Wings? Mm-hmm. See, you know the problem with the Jets? If I'm a defensive coordinator on the other squad, I don't fear anybody on their team, see? I don't fear anybody on the offense. I don't fear anybody on the defense. If I'm preparing against the Jets, it's nobody on that squad that scares me. No one.
Right. I mean, guys like on the defense, Landry, they've been doing their thing. The special teams, they seem to collapse the game against the Miami Dolphins. It's like they – 1 week, like Sean Green, when he played Indianapolis, he was a man possessed. And the following game, he was a man that was possessed of
in the following game, he was a man that seemed like he was repossessed.
And they have to stop with these costly, stupid penalties. You go
really
from
stupid.
Being
yeah.
three and three, you know, third down and three to go, to a stupid roughing the passer penalty, offsides, holding, and now put you into third and long. It kills.
And always at the most, and always see at the most inopportune time. Either that, like you said, either they made a good play to get off the field of defense, and like you said, there'll be a roughing the passer, a jumping offside. So now the defense comes back, and you give these guys four more downs. It's always in a penalty at the most inopportune times, and offense is the same way.
They can't.
Why are we not talking about the Giants?
Well, I say we're not talking about the Giants because, which I was going to bring about a point, they did win last week, but they lost to Pittsburgh this week. But more importantly, the last two games, the offense hasn't been doing that. Eli Manning hasn't thrown a touchdown.
Well, they were playing lousy also, Doc.
Well, Manning hasn't thrown a touchdown. They almost lost the Dallas game. The only reason why they didn't lose the Dallas game is two words, Tony Romo. I mean, you know, this is a guy. I mean, I think there's guys in high school who are better quarterbacks than Tony Romo. I mean, you got second and one, and he's throwing the football. So my question is, I got to question the coach. I got to question the offensive coordinator. What are you doing on second and one and not getting the first down? But Tony Romo, I mean, they keep losing. The Giants lose on Sunday. That should be inspiration. So what they do, they lose right behind the Giants. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the Giants are 6-3. I think a win last week against Pittsburgh would validate them as the best team in football, so we can't say that. I want to say again, we got to take a hats off to Pittsburgh Steelers, who flew in. I mean, everything was there for the Giants to be. I mean, we got to look at the Giants; they had some problems too. New Jersey guys couldn't get gas, but you know that's not a hit there. Steelers come in on the same day, flying to their ballpark. The Giants go into there; they've got what a 10-point lead going to the fourth quarter. And you look at offensively, it was the defense that also got the big return touchdown. They haven't been playing that well, Harold.
But let me say this. They wasn't playing the Jets. They were playing against Big Ben and the Steelers.
Harold,
okay. The game ain't over until Big Ben, until the final gun is off.
Exactly.
Are you still a fan? Oh yeah, I've always been. Hey, C-Wings, Dusty, is anybody surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. My one of my sons is a lifelong Steeler fan. So
oh, yeah, I go back Frank to Mean Joe Green days. I go to Mean Joe Green,
Franco Harris, and all them guys.
Yeah.
But
and when, let me tell you, we're looking at who's staying here. But I'm gonna tell you this: from what they did, I remember talking to Franco Harris. What they did on Sunday, Doc Stanley can be included in that group. That was a class act. I've been proud of it. They have the youngest coach ever won a Super Bowl, and the coach of the Steelers is also the guy that wasn't a pro. He came out from college.
What the Steelers did on Sunday is nothing new. They did it before.
They've done it before.
Harold, calm down. All right? Harold, next thing you're going to tell me, Harold.
I
just want to remind you.
Hey, Harold, you just want to lightly jog our memory? Let me tell you something. The Steelers this year swept New York. They beat the Jets. And they turn around and beat the Giants, so they swept New York. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. It is our sports show. I got a couple of minutes left here. We're talking football.
You have a team like the Steelers who score 14 unanswered points in the last quarter over the awesome Giants. I mean, these guys know what they're doing, and the Giants are in disarray because this chump, Eli Manning, was throwing the ball. He played like a punk, man. Come on. You got to be
calm down, Dusty.
I don't watch a game as a fan for entertainment.
There's nobody been better in the fourth quarter. And I want to say
that.
Hold on a minute.
It sounds like Dusty had $10 on that game.
Hey, Harold, he didn't have $10. He messed around and messed up with Consuela and Henrique's money, baby. That's what it was.
What saved the Giants last week, Doc, what saved the Giants last week was that the entire NFC East lost. The entire NFC lost last week. That's what saved the Giants.
You know what? This is why you listen to Sports in Depth, because Mel Cosell, Steel Baby Lewis, Harold Weston Jr., we are the last word for the best word and the only word you need to hear right here on the Trusted Guard Radio Network. Gang, we're going to wrap it up in a minute real quick. We once again send our condolences to the Brasilio family. We tell you that the Colts won tonight. The Red Bulls are done, and we'll be back here. Look, we'll be back here tomorrow night, and then we're also looking to do something for you on Sunday. It is Sports in Depth, Sports Wrap on the Trust and God Radio Network. It's the crew, and again, we want to salute our new president, actually our president, the 44th president, still intact, Barack Obama, back-to-back win. And this Sunday, the Jets. Okay, real quick, gentlemen, just a quick. Harold, do the Jets win Sunday or do they lose?
Are you crazy? They're going to get killed.
Rooney, Jets win or lose?
Just to be lucky, Doc, if they don't get ran right out of the stadium.
Dusty, do the Jets win or lose, Dusty?
Mark my words, the Jets will not win a game all season after this. I mean, I'll be shocked if they win a game.
Sea Wings,
total disarray, and they're not going anywhere.
Sea Wings, restaurant right hand man. Do the Jets win Sunday or not?
If they play like they played against Indianapolis and Buffalo, they will win 23-20. But if they play like they played against the 49ers, they may not be even admitted into the stadium.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the words from Sea Wings Obama Raymond, a true politician.
Hey, Doc, one more thing, Doc.
Hey, Doc,
one more thing in regards to the Jets. Let me say this, okay? I have a feeling they may be using those immortal words after this game. They'll be using those immortal words.
What?
I thought it was an exhibition.
Hey, Rooney, say goodnight. Tell everybody, we gotta go. Tell everybody goodnight, Rooney.
So, the Sports in Depth Nation has been here. The Sports in Depth panel has been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network, the straw that stirs the drink's been here, and that is the deed has been the great Doc Stan. We hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for the kind words, Rooney. Ladies and gentlemen, this has not been an exhibition. We'll see you tomorrow night. Larry Hardesty, tell everybody good night for us.
Good night,
thank
fellas.
You for joining us for
good
this installment of
night,
Sports
fellas.
In Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us.
Sports in Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network, Sports Wrap, and the Posse. Justino Baby Lewis, Harold Weston Jr., Lewis Jr. too, Cincinnati Sea Wings, and Mel Cosell Smith Jr., and also Mike Longball Bellamy. Trust in God. Three thoughts. Live your life today as if it's stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service for others? When you pay for your space on earth. I'm Doc Stanley. I simply say thank you for joining us. God bless you all and trust in God. And we'll be with you tomorrow night here on Trust in God Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. God bless you all.